Welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. My name is Father Rob Adams, and I am very grateful to be joined by Father George Elliott. Father George, it's great to have you again.
Thanks for having me, Father. It's great to be here.
So today we are on our dogma episode, and as we're recording this mid-May, we are getting ready to celebrate the Feast of Pentecost. So for our episode about dogma and belief and doctrine and all that, I want to talk about Pentecost, because I think it's something that we don't really drill down on. We've got a really strong connection between confirmation and Pentecost, but we don't really talk about what Pentecost itself is in the scripture and in the larger life and tradition of the church. So, Father George, if someone asked you to talk about Pentecost in the Bible, what would you tell them?
Oh, wow. They're not drunk, right? They're not drunk. It's 9 a.m. That's the part that I find to be the funniest, actually, in regard to the...
yeah, because, you know, you could never possibly get drunk first thing in the morning.
Exactly. It's not like, no. It's not that these people wouldn't get drunk. It's that it's early in the morning.
Wow. Well, that's true. I mean, I think we really go to Acts of the Apostles when we talk about Pentecost, right? The event is very much in the scripture. We've got all that, right? The hard part is that scripture actually has a lot more to say about Pentecost than what happens in Acts chapter 2. And that's because the Feast of Pentecost is, to my knowledge, I could be completely wrong, but I think I'm right. I think it's, to my knowledge, the only Jewish feast day that shows up in the Christian calendar.
It depends on how you translate Easter, right?
It's true. Pascha.
Pascha, yeah. But at least in English.
Well, the only reason I say I wouldn't count Passover and Pascha mm-hmm. is because of the way we celebrate the date. Our dating system for Easter is set up so that it never, ever falls on Jewish Passover.
That's right. Have we done an episode on the dating of Easter yet?
No, we haven't, and we totally should, because it is it is peak nerddom.
Exactly. Hold your breath. Next year.
Wait till you get into the whole like Catholic Orthodox date of Easter. You're in for some hardcore nerddom and the moon and emperors. And I mean, I don't know why the Da Vinci Code is not written about the date of Easter. I'll just put it that way.
Exactly.
There's some hardcore, what's Dan Brown's word? Symbology. There's some hardcore symbology going on there.
Yeah.
But
all right, so
our day, our Feast of Pentecost is actually the only Old Testament feast whose name carries over exactly. Now, Father George is right in that the date will never match Jewish Pentecost because our Passover is different. But the word actually in the scripture, the Pentecost means 50 days, right? And it's celebrated 50 days after the Passover. And in the scripture, this day, this feast day is a harvest festival. It's where the Jews are able to harvest their spring and early summer crops, right? And so it's supposed to be this connection between God liberating his people and then God being able to harvest this great fruit from liberating his people, right?
Mm. So the feast is actually, it's a harvest festival, but it's actually about really God being able to kind of enjoy the fruits of his liberation for his people, not necessarily that the people are enjoying the fruits of the liberation.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's hard to...
Or is it both?
I kind of feel like it's both, because we look at this and it's because we grew up with like a real, I don't know, a deficit of faith and sacrifice.
Mm, yeah.
Like 90s church USA was not about making sacrifices or mortification or anything. And we've almost kind of swung too far the other way, where we talk about like sacrifice means I just give everything up. Like I'm Mother Teresa and I never turn the air conditioning on. Right. and
so what's the proper understanding of it?
Well, and I'm not qualified to give the proper, but I know what I read in the scripture. And what I read in the scripture a lot tells me that whenever people offer something to God, they get to partake of it.
Hmm. Yeah.
The Passover lamb is sacrificed and part of it is burned for God. Part of it is a tithe to the priests. and the rest is taken home and eaten at the table.
Yeah, it struck me at some point, I forget when it was, I think it was when I was in the first part of the seminary, I was reading about one of the big feasts, and just as I kind of was trying to imagine it and think, like, what did this actually look like? It really just sounded like a giant Jewish barbecue to me.
Yep.
You know, they were all out there. They had built a whole bunch of altars, and they were out there sacrificing all these animals, and people are, like, hanging out, not working for a week, and eating all the time. And I was like, this just sounds like one big Jewish party.
Yep.
Like, that has a religious significance, obviously, but sounds kind of like a barbecue.
Yeah, I mean, and the temple would have smelled like a barbecue.
Yeah.
Like an Arab barbecue, like with lots of incense and, you know, it didn't smell like drywall and air conditioning. You know, like every Catholic parish in the summer smells like drywall and air conditioning. Just like every Baptist church smells vaguely of pancakes and old syrup. No, that's dogma, by the way. That's not just a hot take. That's true. But I think we need to recognize that there is this overtone to what's going on, right? Like, that God is enjoying the fruits of his harvest, and that the people are getting to partake of it too. It was not it's not just a very solemn occasion where they walked around in pointy hats and danced in circles, you know? And so actually, if you read the readings on the vigil of Pentecost, so the night before, by the way, I don't know any parish that does the full vigil of Pentecost.
Oh, we do.
Oh boy.
Yes. We have two parishes that do them within Nacogdoches.
Well, your boy here doesn't have time to do that. So we're not doing that. But the readings that are given, even on the shortened version, I think are wild because they're from Genesis, and it's not the pouring out of the Spirit. It's not even like creation, like the Spirit hovers over the waters. It's the Tower of Babel.
Uh-huh.
Tower of Babel. And people are like, what? And then, you know, some people are like, well, see, like Babel, the tower is because they all speak the same language. And then at Pentecost, they speak the same language. And in some ways you're right. Right? The fruit of it is the language. But I think we do forget the idea that's even more in the background, and that's what provides a unity for the human race. Like, what are we gathering around? The whole story of Babel is not the problem that they speak their own language, it's that they want to make the world without God. We want heaven without God. Right? And so God strikes you down, and the unity is fake.
Yeah.
And so in Pentecost, we have the same language again. Like, people are speaking in different languages, but understanding the same, because we found heaven and God. The harvest has happened, right? God has gone out and collected these people from all the nations. That's why in Acts 2, it's all this like census information. Like, we are Scythians and Parthians and Greeks and Romans and you know, all this stuff. And you're like, oh, because the people who were scattered at Babel are being harvested together. I mean, talking about harvesting people is kind of like a horror movie, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah, God is,
you know, like, harvest is great, laborers are few, that kind of harvest, right?
Yeah. Not like carnage harvest or anything.
Yeah, not like some alien invasion. Yeah.
but God's harvesting his people. He's bringing them back. And because he's bringing them back, they all speak the same language, which is really, really cool. And I think that, you know, I wanted to talk a lot about liturgical year and all that. I feel like this is just pretty cool on its own. But I think that the thing that I take to prayer a lot at Pentecost is that we live in such a divided world and a divided church. You know, this is not a time of unity. And I kind of pray at Pentecost that God can turn our Babel into Pentecost, right? That God can correct the mistakes that we make and bring about some kind of unity, some kind of cohesion, and bring the people who are scattered by the brokenness back together.
Yeah. You know, I think just as you were talking, it struck me also, I mean, you can see it kind of on a international scale also. A lot of these things like United Nations, the EU, all of this, those all arose after Catholicism was abandoned by the West.
Mm-hmm.
Part. Because before, really, we did have that unity in the spirit, so to speak, in the church mm-hmm. and in God. Whereas now everybody's out there seeking these ways to unite each other or unite themselves and unite the world kind of in these human, on human terms. But as we're seeing, it doesn't seem to be working terribly well. You know?
It hasn't worked, right? Like nationalism, economics, culture. I mean, it goes left and right. It's not just a current thing. World War II was fought between conflicting ideologies, both of which abandon God.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to see that we still haven't really learned anything as a society, right? That God is still just ornamental or part of the superstructure of our thoughts and cultures. And that's not true. That can't be true.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of talk about kind of the idea of the common good as well. When we are truly united in God, and therefore also in love, the common good is actually sought. But it seems that in all of these attempts to unite, whether it's at a national or an international level, somebody always ends up losing, right? But essentially, there is an oppression in the midst of it in right. some way. And it seems that that's simply how the calculus of human beings acting on their own works.
Exactly. And at least since we got to wrap up here, I think we can end on a happy note that even though human beings tend to be bad at finding the common good, I think just like we said earlier, the harvest image in the scripture, it's really, really cool that it's not us that do the harvest, right? The Hebrews harvested their crops because God harvested the fruits of the Exodus, right? Because God harvested the fruits of the Passover first. And I think we have to remember we've got to do our part to fix the world, to fix the church, to fix our families. But fundamentally, it's God who plants the seed and it's God who harvests the fruit. And I think that gives me a little bit of hope that the big guy knows what he's doing.
Absolutely. Our hope is in the Lord, our God.
Who made heaven and earth. Gotcha. Anyway, this is all the time we have for our discussion on Pentecost and doctrine. This has been the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. You can go on over to catholiclink.org and find all sorts of our old material. Also, there's a really great small group initiative over there. I encourage everybody to go check that out over on catholiclink.org. Until next time, thanks, Father George, and we will see you all next time.